All right, welcome to another deep dive. Today we're going way back, back to a case from, well, quite a while ago, but one that has some pretty major implications for IP law even now. It's Warner Lambert v. Reynolds. And I think you'll find it pretty interesting, especially as future lawyers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It really highlights how, you know, basic contract law can have some pretty unexpected consequences,
yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with something like a trade secret. We're basically going to be looking at a situation where the outcome might seem a little counterintuitive at first. Mm-hmm. Really shows you how important that written agreement is, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So, like, the main thing we're going to be looking at today is, well, imagine you're paying for a licensed trade secret, right? Like, does that obligation just vanish the second the secret's out? I mean, it kind of seems like it should, doesn't it? Like, secret's gone, payment stop, case closed. But, well, Warner Lambert Reynolds kind of throws a curveball into that logic.
Definitely does.
And to really understand why, we're going to dive right into the specifics of the case. No beating around the bush.
Makes sense. And it's worth pointing out, we're talking about some serious cash here. Over $22 million in royalties paid over something like 75 years.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a lot of dough. Okay, so picture this. It's 1881. We've got Dr. Lawrence. He's come up with this secret formula for Listerine, and he decides to license it to a guy named J.W. Lambert.
Right.
Now, this is super important. The agreement specifically said that the royalties would be paid based on, well, on how much Listerine was actually sold. It was like a flat $20 per gross.
So gross.
Not,
right.
Like whether the formula was still a secret or not.
Right, right.
That little detail is huge from the very start.
Yeah, it really sets the stage for the whole legal battle later on.
Yeah.
Basically, the agreement linked the money to, you know, how well Listerine was actually doing in the market, not whether the secret recipe was still, you know, under wraps.
Right.
And this arrangement, well, it didn't just disappear. It carried on through all of Lambert's successors.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it landed with Warner Lambert.
Right. And they kept paying those royalties like clockwork year after year, decade after decade.
A very long time, yeah.
Okay, so now let's fast forward. It's 1949. And here's where it gets juicy. The formula for Listerine, you know, the one that's been a secret for, like, forever, it's kind of becomes public. It starts popping up in medical journals, those official lists of medicines, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And get this, this wasn't some corporate espionage thing. Warner Lambert didn't, like, slip up and leak it. It just kind of naturally ended up in the public domain.
Right. It just sort of happened organically in a way.
Exactly. So here we are, 75 years. Warner Lambert and everyone before them, they've paid a total of, what was it, $22 million? $22 million in royalties.
Huge sum of money, yeah.
And they're probably thinking, hang on a sec. Why are we still shelling out all this cash? Like, what are we even paying for anymore?
Right. That's a fair question, right?
So in 1956, they decide, you know what? Enough is enough. And they file a lawsuit. They want to stop those royalty payments. They basically argued that the value they were originally paying for, it just wasn't there anymore.
They had a point.
So the case goes to court, and the main legal issue is pretty straightforward. Is Warner Lambert still, like, legally bound to keep paying those royalties, even though the formula, the thing they were paying to keep secret, is now, like, common knowledge?
Yeah. And at first glance, you probably think, no way. Why would they have to?
Right.
Seems kind of illogical.
Right.
But the court's decision, and it's a pretty important one, was yes. They said, yes, Warner Lambert still has to pay.
Might seem a little backward. So let's break down why the court decided that. What was their reasoning? Basically, they said, look, the contract, the one from way back in 1881, the language was crystal clear. It said that the royalties were tied to making and selling Listerine. It didn't say anything about stopping payments if the secret got out.
Yeah, and I think what's important here is that the court really stuck to, like, the letter of the law, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't about to start adding in conditions that weren't in that original document.
Yeah.
It's almost like if you went to a restaurant, ordered a specific dish, and then when it arrived, you said, well, actually, I've changed my mind. I want the chef to make it differently now. Like,
yeah.
That's not how it works, right?
Yeah, makes sense. So the court was like, you signed the contract, you got to stick to it.
Pretty much.
Okay. So let's unpack the court's thinking even more. So first up, the power of the written word, or, well, the contract.
Right.
They kept going back to that original agreement, like laser focus on the wording.
Mm-hmm.
And since it didn't specifically say, hey, if the secret's out, no more payments, the court was like, well, we're not going to invent that clause for you. It's like, if you go and you commission a painting, right? You give the artist very specific instructions. and they deliver exactly what you asked for. You can't just refuse to pay because you found a cheaper, similar painting somewhere else later.
Right. You agreed to the terms beforehand.
The deal you made is the one that matters.
Absolutely. And this kind of ties into another big legal concept, freedom of contract. Basically, the court was saying that Dr. Lawrence and J.W. Lambert, they were two adults who made an agreement.
Right.
They had every chance to negotiate whatever terms they wanted. If they had wanted those royalty payments to be, like, dependent on the secret staying secret, they could have put that in the contract.
Right, right.
Like, there was nothing stopping them. And in hindsight, maybe they should have.
Yeah, hindsight is always 20/20, right? Now, I think this is the perfect time to talk about the difference between trade secrets and patents. This really helps clarify why the court didn't just assume the payments would stop eventually, like a patent would. Think of it this way. A patent is kind of like a temporary monopoly. The government gives it to you.
Hmm.
It gives you the exclusive right to, I don't know, sell a specific invention for a certain number of years.
Oh.
But then after that, those rights expire and anyone can use the invention.
Yeah.
But a trade secret, that's different. It's all about keeping information confidential, right? And that protection can theoretically last forever as long as nobody spills the beans.
Yeah.
But when you license a trade secret, the terms of that license, meaning the contract, are the things that decide the ongoing obligations. It doesn't automatically expire just because the secret gets out unless the contract says so.
It's like the difference between renting an apartment and owning a house.
Oh, interesting.
The lease on an apartment has a set end date,
yeah.
You know, but if you own a house, well, you own it until you decide to sell it.
Right.
It's kind of similar to how patents have that built-in expiration date, while trade secrets depend on, you know, staying hidden.
Right.
But once you make a deal to license a trade secret, you're essentially making your own private law.
Right.
And that private law, the contract, is what sets the rules, including how long the whole thing lasts.
That's a really good analogy. Okay, so Warner Lambert, they also made another argument. They said that the consideration, like the value they were getting for their money, well, it disappeared when the formula became public. Their logic was, hey, we were paying for the secret formula and now it's not secret. So, like, what are we even paying for anymore?
And the court's response to that is pretty telling, I think.
Yeah.
They basically said that the original deal wasn't just about secrecy. It was about the formula itself, you know, the knowledge that Dr. Lawrence brought to the table and that Lambert got to use to make and sell Listerine. The court wasn't going to get into the weeds of, like, reevaluating if the price was fair after the fact, especially not when both sides entered into the agreement willingly and stuck with it for so long.
Right, right. It wasn't like they were tricked into the agreement or anything. And here's another big thing that really helped the court make its decision. Warner Lambert and the companies that came before them, they kept paying royalties for years and years, even after the formula was out in the open.
For quite a while, yeah.
And the court saw that and said, well, that seems like pretty strong evidence that they understood what they were getting into and that they agreed to the terms.
Right. Their actions basically backed up what the contract said.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue that you didn't think you had to pay when you kept, you know, writing those checks.
Like, it's one thing to say something, but your actions speak a lot louder, right?
Exactly.
All right, so let's bring it home. Why should all of this matter to you, dear listener? Especially if you're on your way to becoming a lawyer.
Well, the Warner Lambert case is like a big warning sign. It shows just how important it is to write contracts carefully and precisely.
Absolutely. And this is even more important when we're talking about intellectual property agreements. They can be very nuanced.
Yeah, because you can't just assume things, no matter how, like, logical they might seem. You can't just go, oh, obviously once the secret's out, the deal is off.
Right, you can't just assume that. The court in Warner Lambert, they're basically saying, nope, if you wanted that to happen, you should have written it down in the contract.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have to spell it out, every little detail, especially with intellectual property agreements.
Yeah.
You can't leave things open to interpretation.
Right. So the takeaway here is super practical. Courts, when they're dealing with these kinds of disputes, they're going to focus on the exact words in the contract and what the parties actually did.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really care about what seems fair or what makes sense after the fact.
Right. They're looking at the original agreement and how both parties acted based on that agreement.
So to sum it all up, Warner Lambert v. Reynolds is a huge reminder that when you're licensing a trade secret, the contract reigns supreme. The secret itself and the legal obligations, those are two separate things. And those obligations, they can stick around long after the secret is, well, not so secret anymore.
And that brings us to a really interesting question for all of you future lawyers out there. When you're drafting or reviewing contracts about intellectual property, what are some things, other than time passing or the secret getting out, that you should consider including to define how long those obligations last?
Yeah, what are some other triggers, right? Like, what kinds of events could happen that would automatically end the agreement? Something to think about. Understanding this case, even though it seems kind of simple on the surface, it's actually super important.
A classic case for a reason.
It's a crucial step in, you know, getting a handle on how contract law and intellectual property law work together. Because, man, getting those contract details right from the beginning, it's so important.
Absolutely crucial.
Well, thanks for taking this step dive with us.
It was a pleasure.
Until next time.
See you then.